Good evening, planet Earth. It's Tuesday, just after 10:30 p.m. Mountain Standard Time here in Skompton, Utah. May the 23rd, 2023, Boblimpdoc. And out there somewhere, if you're listening, it might be tomorrow or the next day. It could be next week. If the Earth is shattered by a random black hole drifting through the universe at 50% the speed of light, it entered our solar system today, maybe, sometime yesterday, and it's heading our direction. It's heading towards Earth. It will tear the Earth in half. So maybe one day you'll listen to this podcast on the drifting half world. Yes, it'll be a half world, a crescent-shaped world. You will think you're on a flat world because it will be kind of like, well, it'll be a broken world. But somehow you'll survive. Yeah. Probably not, though. If some random black hole hit the planet, I kind of think everything would be over. On the other hand, I don't know how much of any of that, given that I should have been born in Missouri, I actually believe. Who knows, right? The first topic relates to an article that popped up on Zero Hedge, but it comes from Dave DeCamp via antiwar.com. Headline, Pentagon walks back claim it killed Al-Qaeda leader in Syria. U.S. military officials are walking back claims that a drone strike Central Command CENTCOM launched on May the 3rd in northwest Syria killed a senior Al-Qaeda leader after evidence emerged that a civilian was actually killed. When the strike was first launched in Syria's northwest Idlib province, reports immediately emerged that the strike killed a sheepherder, or shepherd, with no ties to any militant group. The Associated Press spoke with family members and neighbors of the victim, Lofi Hassan Misto, who insisted he was innocent. According to the Washington Post, Misto, a 56-year-old father of 10, holy crap, and the paper spoke with terrorism experts who said it was unlikely he was affiliated with Al-Qaeda. The operation was overseen by U.S. Central Command, which claimed hours after the strike, without citing evidence or naming a suspect, that the Predator drone strike had targeted a senior Al-Qaeda leader. But now there's doubt inside the Pentagon about who was killed, two U.S. defense officials told Washington Post. We are no longer confident we killed senior Al-Qaeda official, an unnamed military official told the Post. Another official claimed the person they killed was Al-Qaeda, but offered no evidence. Though we believe the strike did not kill the original target, we believe the person to be Al-Qaeda, the official said. CENTCOM's initial press release on the strike did not name the person they killed. Since then, the command has refused to share any details of the operation or say why they could have targeted the wrong person. The U.S. military is notorious for undercounting civilian casualties or lying about them. The Pentagon is also known for investigating itself and finding no wrongdoing, even in instances of significant civilian deaths, such as, you know, August 2021 Kabul drone strike that killed 10 civilians, including 7 children. Yeah, this comes from the antiwar.com. Clearly, they have a perspective. They're not a big fan of war, hence the name of the domain. Beyond that, I'm not an expert on that website. So many things, so many NGOs now are really just a form of CIA spoofing. It's hard to even say to yourself, where do you put this in the bucket? But here's the deal. I think when you're looking at the world right now, there are layers. And if you're a Christian, one of those layers, I think, is spiritual warfare. 100%, I'm going to tell you, I think it's real. I think it's happening. So there is that layer. And that I don't know what that means. I'm not a prophet. I'm not an expert in the Bible. So I can tell you, I sense that something like that is happening. Doesn't mean I'm right. It doesn't mean I can prove it scientifically. I can't. It's just that spooky feeling you get. Just like a dog, just like other creatures in nature, that spooky feeling you get when something just, you know, ain't quite right. So on one layer, you can look at this, you know, drone strike that killed this dude in his 50s who had 10 kids. Wow, this shepherd. On one layer, you can say this is, you know, this is a war crime. And it is. It's absolutely a war crime. By the way, invading Syria and taking its oil is a war crime. At least when I was being taught the rules of war as a new officer in the United States Army 30 years ago, these things would have been called war crimes. We wouldn't celebrate them, we wouldn't be happy about them, and we sure as shit would never be fucking proud of them. They're war crimes. And now, instead of calling them war crimes, we call them oops. Oops, I'm sorry. Oops, I'm sorry you were having a wedding in front of my missile. Oh, I'm sorry you couldn't get out of the way of that hellfire. Why were you standing there? Oops. You have a finite set of options when it comes to the layer of warfare. You can assume our military is so grossly incompetent that they just don't know what the fuck they're doing. And that would tell you we should probably stop these wars, okay? Or you can say they know exactly what they're fucking doing, and you end up with the same answer if you're a principled person. We should stop these fucking wars. Whatever your opinion about 9/11 is, let's be clear. They supposedly killed about 3,000 of our own people. That is terrible if that were true. But we may have, in the last 15, 16, what, 20-some years now of the war on terror, in the last two decades of the war on terror, we have killed millions of men, women, and children. For every one person they supposedly killed, we killed 1,000. Another thing I would add, and this you can file under the category of mass graves. I've said this in podcasts in the recent past, that if you showed me one mass grave, one Native American mass grave, for every one we know about, I bet there are 10 others, at least. And that is my supposition, that we might know about Wounded Knee, we know about the Trail of Tears, but for every Trail of Tears, there were, you know, at least 10 others that we will never, ever know about, that they don't want you to know about, that will stay buried in that literal and figurative sense. For every time we find out that the United States government with its military kills a shepherd, I bet there's 10 shepherds, maybe 100 shepherds, you never fucking hear about. You don't. It gets buried deep enough in the layers of incompetence. If you want to go Hanlon's razor, it gets buried in the incompetence and the moral turpitude. And if you don't want to go Hanlon's razor or recognize that there's no way of knowing, then you can ascribe it to evil as well. So on one layer, this is a war crime, okay, period. It's not debatable if it's a war crime, just like blowing up the Nord Stream pipelines was a war crime. If the United States did it, then, yeah, the United States government, to include the commander-in-chief, President Biden, would be technically a war criminal. But then so would Trump, and so would Obama, and definitely the Bush family, and definitely the Clintons. In fact, pretty much every living president would be a war criminal at this point, if we took it seriously. You know, I was dumb. I was a retarded person in my 20s. I actually believed in the moral principles I was being taught as a cadet, soon to be officer in the military. I actually believed that we were not going to perpetuate the past of those things that we did, those events like in Vietnam, you know, the My Lai massacre, stuff like that, that we wouldn't do that Cambodian B-52 arc-like bullshit, that we wouldn't just carpet bomb poor people, that we had learned our lessons, and that I was naive, I was stupid. I thought people took the road seriously. I was really dumb. And then in my first year on active duty, I figured out with my own eyes when I was stationed in Korea how dumb I was. And then it took another year for me to decide to get out. I missed the wars on terror. And if you're going to ask me, am I disappointed? No. I could have stayed in, and I could have been in Afghanistan or Iraq. I could have been going out there handing out bricks of $100 bills to pedophiles in the Afghani hillsides, handing out bricks of hundies to heroin growers and telling them where to pick up the Air Force truck to get on the Air Force plane, because sure as shit, you know that was happening. So yeah, I could have been there. I could have seen soldiers come to my unit, so to speak, and guard a poppy field, and then find out later that they overdosed on the very same stuff they were guarding. I could have been involved in all that. Only through the grace of God did it not happen. When I finally realized what I was seeing, I got out. And that was before the war on terror, before 9/11. I saw enough corruption and enough examples of what I thought was a giant question mark of behavior that I said, I can't do this. I can't play pretend. I can't play pretend that there's righteousness here. And then later, when I found out about all that missing money, trillions, understand that in the late 90s, the unit I was at had a hard time coming up with money to replace the engine packs on M1 Abrams tanks. They couldn't afford to do it. You could imagine the tank commanders, the commanders of each tank company, praying up and down the avenue that their tanks would make it from the motor pool to the railhead when you go out for gunnery. That was the state of the equipment. We were told there was no money. We were told that we were on a limited budget. And then I find out, again, after 9/11, that there's trillions missing. And, you know, I had one of my old quote-unquote friends try to convince me that all that money went for swimming pools and hookers and cocaine. But that's a shit ton of hookers and swimming pools and cocaine. All those trillions. Right now, a current estimate is somewhere around 20 to 30 trillion is unaccounted for since the 1980s. In the DOD budget. They just don't know what happened to it. They don't know how it got spent. I can tell you definitively that in 1998, it didn't go to engine packs on M1 Abrams tanks. Okay? At least you can eliminate that shit. So I figured out what was going on. I saw the corruption. I saw the rot. And I said to myself, well, if it's rotten here, it's probably rotten everywhere. And that means all the way to the top. And then there's the little wars that happened in the late 90s, the little wars that seemed to correlate to a lot of political bullshit that seemed kind of absurd. And then the question looking back was, the political bullshit meant to cover the war, or the war meant to cover the political bullshit, or is that even a question, really? Operation Snow Globe, Operation Cougar Panther. There were all these dumb shit operations, you know, Snow Monkey, you name it, in the late 90s that involved the former Yugoslavia, that involved a lot of that nonsense, that involved, you know, blowing up, you know, you know, baby milk factories, so to speak. But there are bioweapon factories. I don't know. It's hard for me to believe the stories they tell. But on one layer, we're talking about war crimes, and it's irrelevant. On another layer, and I'm going to switch topics here in a second, because I don't want to beat a dead, yeah, you know what I mean. On another layer, you have to ask yourself, is this just more noise? You see, I don't think we understand the full scope of what's going on. That is my contention since the spring of 2020, for the last 3 years, that there's something ugly afoot. And I don't know for sure what it is yet. I don't. I suspect we're going to find out soon. I really do. The types of military psychological warfare operations that they're executing result in physical illness, adrenal fatigue. It results in deaths from hopelessness. It results in suicides, drug overdoses, you name it. You either give it up or you die. that is the type of psyop they're doing. Well, that doesn't lead to any place good. Even if you're a Bond villain, you got nothing to build on there. It's just a cemetery filled with crazy people. That's all it is. So you can focus on a story like this and say, it's a war crime. Or you can say to yourself, yeah, this is a war crime, but in terms of the big picture, what does it really mean? We already know this, okay? It's like my rant about Roman Polanski and Ghost Rider. If the big reveal is that the Central Intelligence Agency places agents in foreign governments and maybe even selects allied governments, if that's the big reveal, Mr. Polanski, it's not much of a fucking reveal. Anybody with a brain, at least on some level of consciousness, would probably nod and say, yeah, for the last 30 or 40 years. This is something in the 1980s I would have said, maybe, probably. And back then, I believed a lot of nutty bullshit about Reagan and voting, a whole bunch of crap that I no longer believe. You know. Yeah. So you figure it out for yourself. It's a war crime. Is anything going to happen? No. You know, Nord Stream 1 and 2 is a war crime. Is anything going to happen? No. If you're expecting one of the outcomes of this, that the bad people are going to jail, I can tell you definitively before I go to the next topic, if you expect the Hillary Clintons of the world, who might even just be stage actors, to go to some jailhouse, you're going to wait till the end of time plus one. It's never going to fucking happen. Okay? Never. There is a justice in the world. Thank goodness I don't have to worry about it, and neither do you. It's the Lord's justice. But beyond that, these people are not going to go to jail. Sorry. Next topic. This is, as it comes up, related to a quote from Dr. Freckles. The only bank that matters now is the food bank. Dr. Freckles. Anywho, there was an article on Zero Hedge once again. You know, I beat up on Zero Hedge, but it is the last stop McGee, the last stop lounge. You won't find another bar for 100 miles and you're on the edge of the desert. Yeah. Last Chance Saloon. So this article under the nom de plume Tyler Durden was posted on Sunday, May the 14th. Headline, UK food bank dependency reaches record high. Nearly 3 million emergency food parcels were given out in Trussell Trust's UK-wide network between 2022 and 2023, according to their latest report. As Statista's Anna Fleck shows in the following chart, the number of food parcels delivered per 100,000 people varies greatly across different regions, across the UK. You will find more of the infographics at Statista. While London was the region with the highest absolute number of food parcels distributed between April the 1st, 2022 and March the 31st, 2023, when looking at a breakdown of food parcels delivered per 100,000 people, Wales emerges as the region with the highest rates of dependency on food banks. Other areas with notably high dependency are Northeast with, 5,833 parcels delivered per 100,000 population, and East of England with 5,122 per 100,000. I'm going to stop right here. You can read the rest of this article on your own. I think it's worth reading if you want to. You're going to ask, well, what is the meaning of that statement, Dan? Since 2019, which means pretty much for the last 4 years, I have been telling people that I believe a famine, a real live famine, is coming. I did not know exactly what day it would start. And frankly, just like with the monkey herpes psyop, there are things I did not see. Like, I did not know to what extent they would use psychological warfare strategically. It's just not a thing that typically happens in military history to base your entire strategy on mind-fucking people. But they decided to paint some logs black and call them Quaker guns, you know? Anyways, I believe a famine is coming. I think that if you ask the question, how bad will it be? My question is, can you imagine the world going for multiple years without the ability to produce enough food? And maybe even producing 80% less than we normally would. So that really, you don't have enough food for everybody for multiple years. And the question is, well, could that be bad? It kind of depends upon where you live. Like, I would argue right now the famine is already here. It's just our media does a good job of calling it civil war, banking crisis. They give it lots and lots of bullshit names, but I think the famine is here. It hasn't hit the United States that, you know, badly yet, in part because I think that, you know, unlike Alex Jones's 12 billion rounds of ammunition, the thing I think our government's really been doing for the last decade plus is stockpiling food. You know, it makes sense. If you think a famine is coming for whatever reason, even if it's something you're going to cause, because historically, I gotta say this again, the number one way governments kill lots of people historically is starvation. You could even argue that during World War II, the number one way the evil Nazis killed people in the camps was starvation. Starvation is the number one hit. It's not weird Byzantine conspiracies involving weird Wuhan viruses. If you want to believe in that nonsense, go ahead. But statistically speaking, in terms of probability, if you were going to guess which part of that wheel does it stop on and what does it point to once you're done spinning the wheel, governments love to use famines to kill people. The English government used the potato famine to kill a lot of Irish people and to force a lot of Irish people out of Ireland. And if you think that was accidental, again, fuck the king. I don't give a fuck about your king. Fuck you. Oh my God, I'm a good Englishman and I love the king. You know what? I think Cromwell would say, if you're a good Englishman, you should live free. And fuck the king. You know, we're tired of it. You don't need one. Throw it out the window. You don't need to behead it this time. Just take it to the Tower of London, up to the top, and say, hey, Charles, do you know how to fly? We're doing Pinochet 17th century style. Teach us how to fly, you know. Yeah. I think the famine is here. I think if you live in a poor nation at this point, you're probably experiencing it already. I think there are probably parts of our own community in the United States that is experiencing it. And I'd also contend that the Norman Borlaug Green Revolution, it created, before the actual famine, a nutrient famine. Because the ultimate result of the type of industrial farming that Borlaug recommended is to strip the top is to strip the topsoil, to strip it of nutrients, minerals, stuff that used to be in the food, so that all you really do is you produce sugar, and you feed sugar to people. You know, not exactly something we're adapted for. We're not even adapted to have fruit as a primary part of our diet. As monkey people, a long time ago, if we came across fruit, it was kind of nice, but we're not adapted to even eat fruit all the time. So why is it we think we can eat, you know, we can eat sugar foods and eat rice and just eat rice and potatoes and maybe just vegetables, all of which don't have any nutrients in them any longer? How do you think we're going to live like that? So a nutrient famine, a famine of necessary food you need to eat, happened long before this. It probably started peaking out in the 90s. And so when you think about things like diabetes, heart disease, cancer, understand that most of your food, maybe even almost all of it, is crap. And unless you restore the soil, and you know, I'm growing hydroponically, well, okay. But again, there's stuff that goes into that tomato that's not just sugars. Okay, not just the pigmentation. There's other stuff in there that's supposed to be healthy. And in olden times, these things contained those nutrients, those minerals. In olden times, you didn't need to take a bunch of extra vitamins because the vitamins were in the food. I know it's a rant, brothers and sisters, but I believe a famine's coming. Do I think it's something that would be avoidable? Well, since I think government's a big reason why it's coming, it's absolutely avoidable. And as I said in a previous podcast, we can sit on our sofas and eat our schmungus grease and say, couldn't we have done something? And the answer is yes. And would we have done something? And the answer is probably no. It was just too fucking easy. It was too fucking easy to go down that Norman Borlaug road. And nobody wanted to have the conversation, okay, but what if it stops working? And by stops working, we don't have any more of the sugar food. Because it's not just that the nutrients are gone, but now just the calories too, all of it's gone. Nobody had that conversation. It's why I call this neo-Stalinism. The same type of crooked shit happened in the Soviet Union. It just wasn't quite as efficient. Okay, I will grant that the central bank has optimized Stalinism. Absolutely. Optimal Stalinism. We don't need no Sears and Roebuck to price shit. We just price the value of your work. That's it. We pick a magical number that tells you how much you're worth. Today you're worth this much. Tomorrow you're going to be worth that much. That's exactly how their neo-Stalinism works. They don't have to manage a million prices. They only have to manage one. And let the market clear, right? It was always going to end up this way. And I suppose if you see this from an eschatological perspective, you could say, okay, Dan, another point on the map. It looks like something's coming. And maybe you're right. I'm still flip of the coin, brothers and sisters. I really am. Could this be the edge of the end times? Maybe, but then Christ said he would come like a thief in the night. Another thing, too, is that there's a lot of discussion of the fullness of bread. And yet, I look at the world right now, and other than the illusion, I don't see the fullness of bread. I see kind of a faltering reality. I see the collapse of an empire. So maybe, I don't know. If I did know, for certain, I think that would imply we were already there. Because I've said this in the past, and I believe this, prophecy is not for picking presidents. Prophecy is not for investing. Prophecy is not about getting your BMW. Prophecy is something that reassures people of faith, who understand their faith. When the signs occur, they can point to prophecy and say, yes, it was said here that this would happen. It's not meant to predict anything. And as the Lord said, he'd come like a thief in the night. So if we are on the edge of something, I don't know. Neither do you, probably. You're not God. Next topic. Also sort of related, a related topic. Here's a headline. American fast food chains use seaweed, soy, and even wood to beef up menu items, study reveals. Yeah, this is like a Polanski movie. If this is the big reveal, nobody's shocked. An exclusive investigation by the Daily Mail might make you reconsider your next order of fried chicken at American fast food chains. The investigation reveals these restaurants infuse their chicken with additives, preservatives, and other proteins to keep costs low. Okay, Slanky Joe. Some of these menu items are described as premium or all white meat, but far from it. Instead, include ingredients such as seaweed and even wood pulp. The report said there are more than 120 ingredients hidden within chicken burgers or nuggets. Those ingredients are listed below on a restaurant-by-restaurant basis. Yeah, McDonald's has yeast extract, lemon juice solids, spices, acids, several types of flour that makes up their McNugget. Wendy's has a patty that contains 5 allergens. Yeah. So it's worth checking if you're, dehydrated chicken powder. Wow. and smoke flavoring. That's part of Wendy's. Carl's Jr.'s Nuggets. Wow, it has different types of protein. Tell me about it. Hydrolyzed soy, wheat, corn protein, beef fat, and a chicken. It also contains an isolated oat product. Okay. Subway. Okay, Subway. Yeah, I'm not going to go into... You know what? You guys should read this because I can believe it. It has the patina of truth about it. And it also relates to the previous article. Brothers and sisters, we had a nutrient famine before the actual famine. We had a famine of things your body needs. I had a friend, a really cool dude. He went to France, the countryside of France. He had countryside French-style food. And he said he never ate so well. And he also said he lost weight. Yeah. This is, again, anecdotal. But he went to France and we did a podcast about it. And, you know, I would conclude that the soil there is probably healthier than the soil in, let's say, you know, Missouri or Iowa. That if you were to randomly took samples of soil from France, from their agricultural regions, and you compared them to randomized samples of soil from our country, from Iowa, I would contend that our soil is probably mostly dead. That it serves as a sponge. You can pour Gumptus onto it. You can inject it with all types of whatever you need to. You can grow on that featureless fissure some type of corn steepus that you can feed to your kid and then their teeth rot out. I have no doubt you can do that shit, but could we actually grow healthy food and compare it to the food from, let's say, France? And I think the answer probably is no. That for all the mass production of Norman Borlaug Gumptus, we can't grow healthy food at scale. And that's the key word. Are there farmers out there who are growing food on healthy soil in the country? Abso-fucking-lutely. Could they immediately scale up to feed 300 million people? No. In fact, I'm not sure they could feed 30 million. The question is, could they feed 10? That's what I think is coming. And all of this could have been different. We didn't have to settle for it. We could have even just asked the question, what the fuck is a chicken McNugget? That's a fair question. We could have asked it. Maybe there were people asking and nobody wanted to listen. Maybe their voices were buried, just like they're buried today. Just like the voices of dissent are thrown into a hole. But were people even saying, what the fuck is Tang? They went to the moon. They went to the moon and they had Tang. You know something? If there's Tang on the moon, yeah, put me on a rocket ship named Love. I could use a little Tang with rehydrogenized, deconstructed seaweed sodium phosphate cheeseburger, patty soil sauce. Just bury me in it. Put me in the Gumptus. Put me in the hopper. I'm going to the moon to get some Tang. Yeah. Once again, my sofa friend from previous podcasts, you're saying to yourself as you feed upon your corn scrimptus, couldn't we have done something, Dan? And the answer is yes. And if the question is, would we have done it differently? And the answer is probably not. I think that ship sailed a long time ago. It could have been different. It could have been very different. In 1787, we could have rounded up the Constitutional Convention criminals as the coup d'etat that it was. We could have put them in prison on a boat somewhere, and then we could have sunk the boat. There are things we could have done differently. We didn't have to give up our freedom and have it sold back to us for pennies on the dollar. We could have simply said, I am free. We just fought a war to be free. We don't need a piece of paper telling us we're going to be free. And there's a good chance, since you're a bunch of fucking lawyers, that there's a clause in here that will basically take all these freedoms we think we have and flush them down the toilet. We're not all lawyers. We do stuff. We fish. We log. We grow food. We could have done something different in 1787, but we didn't. So when people say things like, well, couldn't it, you know, yeah, it could have been different. It's not gonna be, but it could have been. And even now, I tell you, my friends, if there was a revolution of the human spirit and people were willing to trust liberty again, it could be different. Is it gonna be? No. That's the truth. That's the harsh reality nobody wants to struggle with. So be happy that you got your fucking chicken McNuggets. Be happy that they're made of reconstituted dead fish and other kinds of proteins. In fact, the way they throw that word around, three other proteins, it makes me wonder about Planned Parenthood. Next topic. Am I right? Here's a quote from Dr. Freckles. The same song can mean different things at different points in your life. And this is a very profound quote. It's not really by Dr. Freckles, but here's what it means. There's a song called Baker Street. I remember hearing, you know, I think it was back in the 70s, so I was like 7 or 8 years old or something. And the way that the song sounded to me as a seven-year-old kid, and I loved it, was haunting and scary. Like, it kind of just made me think of something scary. And then later in life, as I'd listened to the lyrics, it made me think of my life, you know? You know, wanting to settle down on some piece of land someplace and just give up everything you've been doing because you're going nowhere. And the song itself speaks to a kind of mediocrity of existence, Baker Street. But when I was a kid, it kind of had that scary feeling to it. Another song from the 70s that I totally misinterpreted, and so did all my friends in Catholic school. I mean, we were in first and second grade, motherfucker. What did we know, really? The song was Afternoon Delight. I thought it was about fireworks. I thought it was about setting off fireworks. I thought it was about getting bottle rockets and setting off bottle rockets. That's what I thought. And all my friends did too. We didn't know. And you know what? I'm kind of glad we didn't. I'm kind of glad I was snuck into the drive-in to see Stripes. Like what, 1981? To see, I think those were the first boobies I saw on the big screen. I'm kind of glad we didn't know. But I will tell you, that song clearly meant something different to a seven-year-old boy than it, you know, did to me as an adult, because I understood what it was referring to. And so this isn't a profound quote. The same song can mean different things at different points in your life, but it's worth thinking about when you consider music. There is music that you'll enjoy as a kid, it kind of makes you vomit now. And there's music you enjoyed as a kid, you still enjoy, but it kind of pulls together different thoughts than it did. It's maybe even becomes richer in a way. In a way, music kind of ages the way that wine does. And if it ages right, it can be fantastic. If it ages wrong, it can be horrible. You know, Afternoon Delight is not a song that aged well for me. If I have a list of songs in my head that I love for all time, this is more of just a reference point. I didn't really love it so much beyond when I was a little kid. And when I figured out what it was about, it was like, well, this is kind of gross in a way too, you know? But Dan, it's perfectly natural. You know, we're going to get to that topic here pretty soon. It's coming up, I think. You know, perfectly natural. So there's a movie by the name of Khartoum. It came out in 1966. And Sir Laurence Olivier plays essentially an Arab. And again, back in the day in Hollywood, white people, played brown people, played Mexican people, right? Played Chinese people. Do you know that John Wayne once played Genghis Khan? I mean, think about that. John Wayne is Genghis Khan. You know, Genghis Khan, right? I wonder how Mongolians feel about that. So Sir Laurence Olivier essentially was blackfacing. And it is blackfacing. But here's the other problem. Sir Laurence Olivier, I believe, you know, this is well documented, was a closeted gay man. So here's the conundrum you throw into the face of a progressive, deconstructive activist looking at racism and other issues of power. Do you beat up on Sir Laurence Olivier for blackfacing? Or do you say, you know, he was a closeted gay man and we can't beat up on him? It's one of those things where you kind of get stuck in a conundrum. What do you do? Me personally, I like the movie Khartoum. Historically, people have played other genders and other races in theater for a very long time. In many cultures, men played women. Women weren't allowed to be in the theater as an actress. You could only watch, maybe, but you didn't get to play. So men would pretend to be women. That's something that goes back in the history of the theater thousands of fucking years. So the idea of pretending to be an identity that you're not, that's not new. That wasn't invented by anybody in the United States of America. That was just a thing that's been going on for a long, long time. And, you know, maybe the theater was a safe place for gay people for a long time. Again, could be a cliche, could be a stereotype, could be the truth. I'm not an expert. I think the movie Khartoum's a good movie. The movie Khartoum is a good film. It's something that's also currently free for you to watch on YouTube. I don't like YouTube, and I think they do a lot of crooked shit, but it's a pretty good film. I don't know. Another thing about this particular film is the Charlton Heston film, and of his different roles playing, you know, Chinese Gordon. Again, think about it. Chinese Gordon. Yeah. If you're worried about things triggering you that you think might be racist because you had a deconstructive professor who scared the fuck out of you, then maybe you shouldn't watch this. It might hurt you. Trigger alert. But it's a decent enough film. Next topic. Sir Laurence Olivier. That's kind of racist. No, that's no sexist. That's homophobic. No, it's just stupid. I don't care. Next topic. Next topic, you know, and I've brought up this subject before, and I don't think I'll spend a lot of time on it, but it does relate to a theme of the last few podcasts. Here's a quote from Dr. Freckles. It's not all or one. It is enough. Enough people can change the world, for good or for bad. And only Jesus knows the number. That's right. Enough people. If you said to me, how do we change the world? Enough people have to change. It's not going to be everybody. If you have a plan that requires everybody changing, there's a very good chance that your plan is flawed and that it will lead to massive amounts of people being killed. So if your plan says, well, everybody has to be different, no. That is never going to fucking work. The only way to make that bonsai reality work is to pull out the trimmer and somebody ends up on the floor. So it's never going to be everybody. It's also not going to be one person. One person isn't going to change everything. One person isn't going to make the whole difference. One person can start a ball rolling, but the ball has to keep rolling, and it's going to require other people. If the question is, what does one person in the woods do other than survive, the answer is nothing. They survive in the woods until they find a town. And then if something changes in that town, it's going to be that person, maybe, and other people. Enough people, but not everybody. Enough people can change the world for good. Enough people can change the world for bad. It's always been like that. Until the end of time, it's always going to be like that. But it's still, if the question is, if they, well, Dan, could it have been different as I'm eating my decomposed, rescombulated chicken fried McNuggets? I would say, well, eat your chicken fried McNuggets made of wood pulp and asbestos. I don't really care. I'm telling you, it could have been different, and it wasn't gonna be. That maybe it was always going to end up this way. And you can write into that any eschatological interpretation you want to. If you want to call me, once again, a fatalist, you can. Do I think people can change? Yes, I know they can. Do I think enough people will change at this point to do the right thing, to save our butts, so to speak? I don't think so. I think people have become so comfortable in their bad ideas that there's just no breaking them out of it until, really, the earth shakes. Until the mountains thunder, until the sky turns red, until the seas boil. I don't think any motherfucker is going to change their position. I'm probably not, you're probably not, your neighbor down the street's probably not. So people will be in their own little worlds, and the spiritual warfare continues. And everybody will have their own demon whispering in their ear, whisper, 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 whisper. And until the sky breaks open, people will continue to believe their nutty bullshit. That's it. That's where we're at in the game. I'm of the opinion that we're going to find out some real big truths here pretty soon. And they're not going to be released by Trump, and they're not going to be released by Biden, and it won't be some whistleblower. It won't be Julian Assange. It won't be QAnon. It won't be all of the other Anon folks. We are going to have truth open up to us on a cosmic scale, in a sense. It will be obvious and gigantic. And yet, on that day that this truth shows up, right in our faces, there will still be people that deny it. That is also going to be true. And could it be different? Sure. Is it going to be? I don't think so. I don't think so. The last topic is actually a podcast I need to actually change this one. I got to edit this post really quick because it's marked as private, but it's not supposed to be. It's supposed to be public. So we're going to make it public and then switch back to the other mode. This last topic is really storytelling, and it's storytelling I was going to do before I was injured last December, before I broke my left humerus, which wasn't very humorous, funny, whatever. I broke it, though. And it's getting better. I'd say I'm pretty close to 80% at this point, and I can see 100%, but I've been taking it easy for about a week because I needed to take a break. And then I'll think tomorrow I'll hit it hard again, but for several days. But yeah, it's healing. It's healing. I can't say that it's healing as fast or as easy as I would like it to, but as the doctors pointed out, it's a big bone. Not something a woman's ever said to me, by the way. Dan, that's so beta cuck. Fuck you. It's a Scudzo Christmas. Once upon a time in Grinkentown, there were two travelers making their way in the world. Chambliss is falling this time of year, old Trolley said to his friend Blimph. Yeah, it's Striegen dust or Triegen dust. It's some type of scrumbo to give us the blue snow this year. Old Trolley and Blimp lived in a shack not far from 3rd Avenue. It's near that place where those nuns were murdered last year and their bodies were dumped. They had a shared small room near Vleed's Tavern, and it had a microwave and a sink to clean yourself and water 3 hours a day. It was good living, Blimp said. He made enough money to share the rent. He had a great job. He chucked bodies at the Taco Time dump in Maple Leaf. You still got the scog worms? Trolley asked Blimp. No, Doc Grunkus gave me the wood pulp and the diesel fuel, so it seems to be improving. A lot of folks had scog worms, at least the folks that live on the streets. You'd fall asleep too close to one of the sewer manholes or gutters, and them things would just crawl up and lay eggs in a person's ear. You'd wake up with a headache, and if not treated, you would hemorrhage into the brain cavity, dripping white pus and a pinkish-yellow substance. That's good, man. Them things are bad news. It was December the 24th, 2028, and Blimp had heard that everyone gets a protein treat this year. Yes, it was December the 24th, 2028, and Blimp had heard that everyone gets a protein treat this year. Mostly, it's been cricket flour and bacterial paste. You'd get some can of purple, and it would have vitamins, but no one could tell you what was in the purple. But this year was special. This year we got a treat. We got the extra protein. This year, all the Skrieglin Zone would eat like kings. A protein treat, a chunk of lab-grown meat, some type of protein goat meat, synthetic blombuli, maybe a sheep, merged with a spider. They call it speep. Or spam. So it was Christmas time, and it was special, and it was a holiday, and we had something warm for the pot. And we could chuck that chunk of lab-grown meat into our pot and say to ourselves, this year we get a protein treat. And we could turn on the television set and watch the people talk about how funny things were and how normal things were, and everything was okay, just don't look at the pillars of smoke in the distance. Ignore those. Merry Christmas, right? So I was supposed to do that little story, and frankly, it was supposed to have more wordage to it. But I injured my arm, but that's a scudzo Christmas. And I gotta tell you, Christmas in 2028 sounds really, really great. You get a chunk of protein, throw it in the pot, it'll be hot. It better be hot, or you'll get the scog worms. If you like this podcast, and I'm not sure why you would, but if you do, you can donate. There's a link to PayPal. I save the begging for money for the last. I do that on purpose. If I beg up front, people might give me money and hate the podcast, and I say, you know what, listen to the whole fucking thing. And then decide if you want to donate. So there you go. You can donate. But please, by all means, listen to the following disclosure and addendum. Take care of your food, your water, your shelter first. Take care of the people you love. Try to find some joy in this life because everybody could die tomorrow. You don't know when you're going to die. It is just the way life is. It's the way it's always been. So treat tomorrow or today or tomorrow's yesterday. Treat tomorrow like it's the last day. Like it's the last day you got, and live a joyful, happy life. If you're going to stockpile a little food, I don't think it's crazy, but as I've said, nobody's basement's big enough. You're going to have more than food. You're going to have food for the spirit. Go ahead, do it. Stockpile food. Buy some used books and put them in plastic containers. But also, if you're stockpiling food, think about your pets. If you got a dog, if you got a cat, if you have a parrot, whatever you have, please, please, please think about them too. If you've done all these things and you feel safe and you got rent money and you got food money and you got a special honey and she's covered in crack cocaine, if you got all the cash money to have a cocaine hooker wife and live a cocaine hooker life, if you live on a yacht that you just bought and you're saying to yourself, well, gee, Dan, I love your podcast and hey, I've got all this crypto money, then take your crypto and do what is so easy. Convert it to something you can use with PayPal and click on the fucking link and PayPal me. If your answer is, well, I'll lose something in transaction, you can charge me back that hobo. If you want to give me 20 bucks, just give me 20 bucks and accept that some of that will be cut away by the crooked system. Either the miners or some type of bank or some other shithead, they're going to take their cut. This is the Death Star. Okay, but you can donate to me. You can. I can use the money. I know a lot of people can use the money, so can I. Feel free to donate. You don't have to. For Tuesday, May the 23rd, 2023, Bo Blimp Doc. It's going to be midnight soon, but it is still Tuesday. Tomorrow is hump day. Don't be a chump day. Don't get into a slump day. Stay positive, ho. Focus on tomorrow. Focus on the light. And have a great rest of your, you know, Tuesday.